Hi, I'm Peter Clark. This is Inside Language with linguist Kate Burridge. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Peter.
Again, we're referencing what we learned at school. You probably learned, I learned parts of speech. Mm-hmm. When I talk to my students these days, they don't even know what that phrase means, parts of speech. Nouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs. Mm. They're not very sure what they all are. We're seeing nouns and verbs and adjectives change their clothes a lot in our language.
In fact, English has always had this very handy flexibility that one part of speech can cross over into another. It's a fallout of this, again, loss of grammatical endings. When you lose the grammatical endings, you can turn a verb into a noun or a noun into a verb or an adjective into a noun very, very easily. If you compare English with a close relative like German, which has much more in the way of grammatical endings, it doesn't do this kind of thing. It can't do it.
Take us back to an earlier form of English when we had inflections, in other words, endings to signify case and number, whether they were plural or singular, and gender too sometimes. When English was more inflected, each word was more inflected, this interchangeability wasn't as easy?
No, because nouns would have their own special set of grammatical endings.
And you knew they were a noun.
Exactly, from those endings. And verbs would as well. We still have some inflections on verbs maintain them the best, but nouns still have the plural. But we don't have these markers on nouns and their modifying words like adjectives, basically to signal, you know, who's doing what and to whom. And whom is a really good example of one that's, you know, I guess an inflection that's hanging in there, but it's really on the way out. Verbs become nouns, nouns become verbs, you know, nouns become adjectives. Fun just did that recently. I had a funner time, or it's the funnest time of all. A lot of older speakers don't like that. Of course, when they're new, we tend to feel a bit queasy about them. Perhaps some do anyway.
Let's go noun to verb firstly. We see it a lot in sports commentary, don't we? Things like at the Olympics. A medal is a medal. It's a tangible object. It's very clearly a noun, but you can also use it as a verb, particularly in sports language. He or she medalled, she's going to medal in these Olympics. How does a noun then become a verb?
We can increase our vocabulary by adding endings. We can take a noun like diary and add eyes on it, diarize, so we can create a verb that way. That's called derivation. But we can also, it's sometimes called zero derivation when you don't add anything. So you just simply take the noun and you turn it into a verb. So you've got the noun medal, or you've got podium. You can also podium, someone podiumed. In fact, both of those have been in the language much longer than you think. I tracked down, I think it was medal back to the 1860s and podium as a verb, I think it was 1940s. And of course, that's when they first appear in print. So they might have been around a lot longer, you know, in spoken language too. So they sound quite modern, but in fact, they're much older.
While you're mentioning podium, it can be a noun, a verb, and an adjective, a podium appearance.
Ah, yes, in that case, a podium appearance, I wouldn't want to call it an adjective then, but you're, you know, in good company, because traditional grammar would have called it an adjective. It's just that it's not a very good adjective. And we have tests for adjectivehood, and one very good test for an adjective is to say whether you can say very in front of it. So you could say, what was the example you just gave?
Podium appearance, a very podium appearance? No.
No, it's not very podium. He made a grand appearance, a very grand, you know, his appearance was grand. His appearance was podium. Absolutely not. So it fails all of the adjective tests. So what we say then is it's still a noun, but all nouns can in fact modify other nouns.
Is it more like word building?
Yeah, because sometimes if they hang around that other noun for long enough, they become like noun-noun compounds.
Are there cases where something is clearly a noun, but it can clearly be an adjective as well and pass the adjective test, like the very test?
Yes, well, fun would be an example there. That passes all of the adjectives tests now, at least for younger speakers, perhaps not for older speakers. You know, really in English, you can take any part of speech and turn it into another. You can even take a grammatical word like up, you know, which is a preposition, your favourite word class, I think. Isn't that right, Peter?
Yes.
And you can tape up and you can say up the ante, or, you know, down tools. They, you know, down can be a verb as well. He's on the up. It can be a noun. You know, you go up, so it's an adverb. It can be all sorts of things.
It's a worry. Shape-shifting prepositions as well. It's
I'm very up. It's an adjective.
Some people's pet hate is the word impact, which is a noun, an impact, or an impact crater, I suppose it becomes an adjective or a describing word there. Has an impact upon is quite wordy, but now impact has become a transitive verb. I can impact you with my speech. What's going on there? Is it just logical that we're trying to cut down the number of words and turning a noun into a transitive verb there?
Well, it's neater and it's stronger, isn't it, to impact something rather than to have an impact on something, which is a bit wordy and a bit noun-y. You've got this, you know, this stronger word. Of course, when it's new, we don't feel very happy about it, and sometimes it smacks of pretentious jargon. But you've got to think of, oh, what would be a good example? Okay, the verb to contact. That seems a perfectly fine verb now. Yet something like 80 years ago, one person described the verb to contact as a lubricious barbarism. He hated it. It sounded like jargon. It's much handier than saying, you know, get in contact with. Contact actually filled, you know, a gap in vocabulary. So, and the same will happen with impact. Of course, with impact, you've got the added thing where you're missing the impact upon, and that's happening a lot too, you know, to protest something rather than to protest against something.
Or about something.
Exactly, yes.
Kate, at the end of the day, if I use a noun and turn it into a verb without all the associated phraseology, prepositions, etc., is that more potent? Does it have a different linguistic effect?
I suppose it's hard because if you are taking a noun and you're turning it into a verb and it's not normally a verb, it's automatically going to have a lot of impact, isn't it? Because it's going to be new, it's going to stand out, it's going to be novel, it'll be a bit slangy, it'll attract attention. So it'll have that to it. But if you were to, you know, look at ones that have been in the language for a while, they have different abilities, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. So if it's a noun, it can take a whole lot of describing words. And as a verb, it's a sort of more action, it can be anyway, and it takes different sorts of modifying words. There can be a different style to it because a noun-y style can be more abstract. So there are a whole heap of things going on there, I think. If you look at, say, advertising English, in fact, this is probably a good example because advertising English uses overwhelmingly nouns and adjectives, but very few little verbs. And if there are verbs, they're these bland little things like put or be or something that are there to kind of support this superstructure of nouns and adjectives, but everything goes into the, well, adjectives and nouns.
Is this shape-shifting between nouns, verbs and adjectives, and I guess adverbs to some degree in the English language, is it specifically an English thing? Do the other languages with much more in the way of declensions and conjugations find it harder to have this interchangeability?
Yes, if you've got nouns and verbs that will that have a set of grammatical endings or, you know, endings that go with them, it is harder to cross in that way, whereas English really doesn't have much, and it's quite easy to take a, you know, whatever part of speech and turn it into another.
If I say to you in a noun-y sort of way, what's your decision, Kate? Mm-hmm. That's intrinsically different from whatever you decided, Kate.
That's right. Or you could say, you know, the decision was made. That's where you get into that kind of
with
sneaky
the passive
prose. Yes, exactly. The decision was made by whom, you know, or you could say we decided to close the school.
When you use a passive, you remove the agent of the action away and they become veiled, if you like. That's why politicians use a lot of passives.
Yes, there's the sneaky agentless passive. But if you look at, you know, even some ordinary magazines, for example, you'll find that the majority of passives are agentless. I mean, if I were to say, I don't know, the book was published in 1957, you're not interested in who published it. So, you know, there are so many of those sorts of passives. So it's wrong to condemn the agentless passive because they are quite handy, really.
Kate, while most nouns seem to be able to be happily made into verbs, it's not so easy in the reverse, is it? For example, we just talked about decisions and deciding. We don't have a decide.
No.
We have decisions as nouns. Mm. And that's pretty common across the English language. So verbs don't make the reverse journey as easily.
I think you'll find they do. You can have things like, and people don't like it, of course, a good read. Was that a good read? A big ask, of course, that was one that used to attract a lot of bad press. A guess, that's another one.
A very common one in social media language is hashtag fail, but that's a big fail. Mm. It sounds different from that's a big failure.
That's right. It's more colloquial, of course, because it's new.
A fail is definitely a noun that's come from a verb and has a certain punch.
Yes, when there was an already existing failure there.
So a verb becoming a noun does have a certain crackle about it.
And I think that's why some people don't like them, because they are often part of someone else's specialist language in that case. And that was certainly what happened with something like contact. But, you know, if you look at early dictionaries, again, like Samuel Johnson, he condemned the verb colour because it was, you know, converted from a noun. People really, you know, have never liked this. What I see is a very handy flexibility of the English language.
Well, finally, let's go back to those school days when you and I probably had primary teachers saying, The noun is the naming word, the verb is the doing word, the adjective is the describing word. Is that a waste of time these days? We should be, in contemporary grammar, looking at what they're doing within a sentence or within language at that moment. Is that how we should be looking at it now?
Oh, I think if you're suggesting that parts of speech are a waste of time, then no, because they're definitely very real. They're not as clear-cut as we were told in primary school, but in fact, even traditional grammar had descriptions like verby noun and nouny verb and, you know, a describing sort of noun. And they had all these sorts of fudge phrases which suggested that they weren't as watertight as they made us believe. But oh no, most certainly. But rather than these sorts of definitions, which can, you know, they can be useful, the noun is the name of a person, place or thing, that there are prototypical nouns that will fit that, but there are so many nouns that don't. What we tend to do now is to actually look at the grammatical behaviour of these parts of speech. Like I mentioned earlier, what can adjectives do? Well, they can take very, they can appear after the verb, they can sometimes take endings like big, bigger, biggest. So we look at their grammatical behaviour, but you will find that some really good adjectives don't do that either. You know, asleep is a really good adjective. You can say the man seems asleep, but you can't say the asleep man. Why not? You ought to be able to. So, you know, they're very, very interesting. Very interesting. And really, it's a shame that grammar has got such bad press, because exploring these things is really, really interesting. And perhaps at this point, I should remind people that glamour and grammar are historically the same word, Peter.
Kate, I'm so much clearer now. Thank you so much. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Kate Burridge is Professor of Linguistics at Monash University in Melbourne here in Australia. I'm Peter Clark for Inside Language. Until next time.